You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Two hours down, hour three begins now. Kevin Walsh and George Kurtz here on Fantasy Sports Today. And we are joined by none other than Emery Hunt, the CEO and founder and analyst at Football Game Plan, the NFL draft expert. Emery, how's it going?
I'm doing fine, man. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Excited to talk to you about all of these prospects. But before we get into some specific players, there's something I want to ask you as an evaluator, a draft story that's going around right now, and just get your take on it. Darius Geis came out and told people that he was asked by an NFL team about his sexuality, if he liked men. Someone also made a comment to him that they heard a rumor that a family member of his sells herself, which is, you know, it's inappropriate. There's a ton of outrage over it, and I think it's understandably so. As an evaluator, is there any reason for anybody to ever be asking any questions like this? Is there honestly anything to the idea that teams can really gain stuff from like this? Because from where I sit, it's completely unprofessional. I think it's also illegal to even ask things of that nature, and I really think there's no place for it.
Yeah, I agree, man. I mean, at the end of the day, who cares? You know, if let's say if it's true or not. I mean, I thought we were in the business of winning football games. For instance, I always use this analogy. If Lawrence Taylor was doing what Lawrence Taylor was doing on Coke, then we need to get more Coke. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't care. You know, if whatever you got going on in your personal life, that's between you and yourself. You know what I'm saying? Like, who cares? And, you know, I think a lot of that, granted, I do understand the premise of questions and how you react, but certain questions are illegal. And it serves no purpose. It doesn't tell you anything. And again, at the end of the day, let's say if you were to answer yes, then what? Would you not draft him, despite what you saw on film? Like, it makes no sense to ask that question. There are other psychological questions you can ask to gain the information that you want.
I think Emery makes a great point because, let's face it, I mean, the NFL is the game. The business is of winning games. I mean, general managers would draft Genghis Khan if they thought they could get an extra win out of it by drafting him. It's the way it is in the NFL. Listen, let's get right down to brass tacks here. Saquon Barkley, is he going number one to Cleveland?
I felt he was going number one to Cleveland prior to the chaos we saw the other day. But now what went down yesterday just confirms that he's going number one, because they've now addressed the need at receiver. They got a veteran in there. They're going to revamp that offensive line a little bit. They're going to get Joe Thomas back. They brought in a veteran. I didn't like the Kaiser trade. I thought they could have allowed him to develop behind that veteran or just start the season with him. But they moved Kaiser to get a guy in the secondary, so that takes away another early pressing need, which puts pick number four in question of maybe they may move that pick. But number one, I mean, you look at that offense right now and you say, man, the only thing they're missing is a game break in the backfield. And lo and behold, they have the first overall pick, and there's Saquon Barkley.
Emery, you were down there at the combine, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, what was the buzz like around the performance that Saquon put on? Because I didn't think that this guy could get any more hype with that he was already getting just based on his performances at Penn State. And then he put on, I think you could say, maybe an all-time performance at the combine. What was the buzz like, and what was your reaction to seeing what he was able to do?
See, my reaction was more of just, okay, this confirms whatever we saw on tape. Cause, like, we knew he could lift weights. We knew he was fast. We knew he was agile. We knew he was a I don't want to say physical freak, but a guy that definitely put in the work in the weight room. We are witness to that since he was in high school because of social media. We saw the posts on Twitter, Instagram, him, you know, squatting an absurd amount of weight, hang cleaning an absurd amount of weight. So I'm not surprised by what he did at the combine. I was just shocked that most of my media members were. It was like, wow, you know, have you guys seen Penn State? Like, this guy's been doing this all season long. So I wasn't surprised, but the buzz was, you know, people were going up in arms about how he was working out. So I guess it helped get everybody on board of the Browns probably taking him number one. And I'm glad that happened, because as a former running back, I hate how people say you don't take a back number one. He can go number two, but not number one, which makes no sense.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, that doesn't make much sense. One pick. How many quarterbacks do you see going in the first round? And what's your best guess as to where they go?
I think when you look at the quarterback position, you can see Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield. So I would say five quarterbacks possibly going in round one. I would like to see a backfield that has Lamar Jackson and Saquon Barkley. So if Cleveland can make that happen, that would be ridiculous. Oh, they'll lead the league in rushing for about a decade, especially with those weapons. And, oh, my goodness. So I think look at a guy like if you're looking at Eli Manning, Josh Rosen sort of plays a little bit like Eli Manning, so I can see him going to, New York. I can see Baker Mayfield being someone going out west to Arizona. Josh Allen, I can probably see him learning behind a veteran in Washington and going to the Redskins. And a guy like Sam Darnold, I think, could go to either the Jets or the Broncos. So I think, you know, when you look at it, Lamar Jackson is the wild card. You know, could he go to New York? Could he go to Cleveland? Does Cleveland take a quarterback in round one? And if so, that pushes everyone down. But I do think it'll fall somewhere. I think Cleveland may be a spot for Lamar Jackson. But I just see Rosen going to the Giants, Mayfield going to the Cardinals, and Darnold going to the Broncos, and maybe Josh Allen going to the Redskins.
Emory, let me ask you with these quarterbacks, because Sam Darnold decided not to throw, and there were some people who were upset about it, and I mean, I'm not upset about it, but it is odd that a guy just opts not to do it. And it, in a year where there's this many quarterbacks vying for the top spot and everybody else is willing to go out there and put it on display, I mean, does that bother you or do you not really care?
I don't really care, man. You question, usually if one or two guys don't throw, and a third guy jumps in and says, okay, I'm not going to throw. You get it? Mm-hmm. But when everybody is throwing, and all these guys are high-profile guys, you kind of say, well, why are you throwing? Maybe he wasn't feeling 100%. Or for whatever reason, I just thought it was kind of odd that everybody is throwing except you. I get it. When you, as a player, are the valued asset, you control the card. So you can really dictate how you want to handle this. And we saw Lamar Jackson do the same thing from a running perspective. Like, no, I'm not going to run. You should know I'm fast. You should know I'm agile and explosive. I'm just going to throw. So maybe Barkley in a reverse way was like, you know what? You know I can throw. I've thrown all my career. Let me show you how much of an athlete I am.
Emory, let's say you're right. Let's say, and I think you are right. That's the way I would think the draft's going to go. Barkley goes one. Rosen goes two to the Giants. Man, at least Indy in the driving seat at three, because let's face it, they don't need a quarterback. Assuming Andrew Luck is coming back and he's healthy, we'll assume that as well. Who's trading up to that pick? I think Indianapolis trades out of it. Who's trading up?
Buffalo has the most ammo. You look at two first-round picks, they can use both picks to jump into the top five. And looking at within that same division, the Jets, picking where they pick, maybe on the outside looking in. So they may be in position to call Cleveland and say, hey, we'll swap spots with you just to get ahead of Buffalo, because Buffalo has that ammo. So I think Buffalo or the Jets competing with one another could jump up to number four to grab a quarterback that they like.
We're on right now with Emory Hunt, the founder and analyst over at Football Game Plan. You can follow him on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. Emory, I want to just ask you as a whole, because you give full grades all these prospects, and you do that before you get to the combine because you have to base it off the tape. What specifically are you looking for now when you're watching these guys at the combine? What is it that you're trying to see, right? Because if you've got a guy graded down with great speed and goes out there and runs a subpar 40 time, how much are you going to move that? Because sometimes maybe in-game speed could be different if a guy gets a poor get-off at the 40.
Yeah, you have to be careful. That's why I don't go ahead and adjust guys' rankings based off the combine. What I'm mostly going to the combine to do, interview players, get player interviews, and let's say if there's a guy at the combine that I didn't have a grade on and he goes out there and wows with his athleticism, his 40, his workout, now I go back to the tape and watch him, you know, because maybe I saw his name, but, you know, so far, let's say, for instance, and it can get this way. I graded 52 running backs, right? So you go to the combine, you see a guy that's not on your list, and, you know, when you probably saw his name, you probably thought, well, I've graded 52 already. I'm ready to move on. You know, I've looked at enough. And so you left one out. And so you see him working out. You're like, okay, now I got to go back and check him out. It happened yesterday at the pro day. I was at Rutgers pro day, and I saw Gus Edwards, workout, former Miami running back, played at Rutgers, had some decent success, but split time, and Rutgers was down, so they abandoned the run. So that limited him from getting 1,000 yards or something like that. But he had a really good workout. I thought he caught the ball well. He ran pretty fast for a guy that's 230. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to go back in and evaluate his tape to see if, you know, what did I miss, or if he's worthy of, or where can I place him on this list. So that's what I'm using the combine for, guys that are not on my list that may have a good workout, go back, watch the tape, and grade them, and then adjust that list accordingly.
Emery, from the time college football season ended until now, the pro days, the combines, all the practices, and anything else you've seen, who are your biggest risers and biggest fallers?
I think when you look at a guy, as far as a riser is concerned, you always got to go to the small school ranks. Cornerback Malik Reeves is a guy that I think is not getting enough due as a player that can ball. You know, I've seen him for 3 years. At Villanova, I've been to a bunch of different games. I've called a couple of games. I've seen him against Penn, another receiver, another prospect out there, and Justin Watson. They had a really good matchup. So I think Malik Reeves as a corner is one that you're going to start to hear a lot of. And also, when you look at, let's say you're looking at the running back position, everyone's looking for the next Tariq Cohen. But I do think a guy out here in New York City, Chase Edmonds, is going to wow people. And also, down at Grambling, you have Martez Carter, 5'7", about 205, with a ton of explosiveness and burst. He can start off initially as a kickoff or punt returner and stand in the HBCU ranks. Another running back in DeLance Turner, 6'1", 214, with great acceleration, good power, and a very underrated receiver.
Emery, when you're doing the interviews with these players, is there a certain question maybe that you ask each time that you're looking for a response to, or, you know, maybe just a specific thing that you're just trying to learn about these guys as you're talking to them while you're at the combine?
That's a great question, because I tend to have a little formula that I work with, and two questions always, and there's two reasons why I ask these two questions. One, it's a great question because it gets them talking and feeling comfortable, and you get a great answer. You know, you find out why they love the game and what the game taught them. The second reason why I ask that is because I have two books called What Did Football Teach You? And Football, A Love Story. So obviously you want those questions to get asked because that's great plugs for the book. And I always ask how these guys, I like to get them to talk shop because you know, they are more comfortable talking what they know, as anybody is. You ask someone what they know, they can go on and on and on. So let's say if I'm talking to a running back, I always ask about the finer points of the position, defensive lineman, what's the unique part about playing defense line, yada, yada. And so you get people talking about what they know, which shows their football IQ, which makes them also feel comfortable with talking with you, and you'll be able to get anything that you need coming from these interviews.
Actually a pretty smart way of going about an interview anywhere when you think about it. Emery, I'm a Cowboy fan, so this show's all about me. What should the Cowboys do at 19? Listen, life is all about me. Listen, I live with four women, okay? This show is all about me, damn it, for 3 hours. Calvin Ridley, everyone's talking about Calvin Ridley going to the Cowboys. What should Dallas do at 19?
Listen, I like that pick. You know, I think when you look at the Cowboys, I feel as though there is a big need at wide receiver opposite of Dez Bryant. They have to get a little bit more dynamic. Terrence Williams is a nice player, but one that you can't rely on. So maybe a Calvin Ridley, a Courtland Sutton. If Christian Kirk is still there, I may run up to the podium and hand that pick in for Dallas. So I think you have to go receiver. Do you have to continue to stockpile weapons around Dak Prescott, the franchise quarterback, and help really grow that offense to even more of a balanced attack? They're pretty balanced, but I think they can get a little bit more dynamic if they add a game breaker at wide receiver.
I want to ask you about three defensive players who I think fall into a similar category. They had very high expectations coming into the year, and then injury kind of held them back from reaching their potential, and they've slipped down boards compared to where we thought they would be. That's Jair Alexander, the corner out of Louisville. That's Howard Landry, Mike Blewett's man out of BC, and then he's the outside linebacker / edge, and then you have the Derwin James, the safety out of FSU. Well, when you're looking at these guys, because I think everybody feels the same, that their tape from this season doesn't match the tape from the year before, but a lot of people are able to look at the injuries and say that's why. So how much can you weigh seasons to seasons tape, and what do you think about those three players specifically just coming into this draft?
I like all three players. You know, I've seen probably 4 years of Harold Landry. I've gone to a bunch of Boston College games, so I've seen him progress year after year. I think he's better off the ball as opposed to with his hand in the dirt. I do like how he's able to find multiple ways to the quarterback, which is great. He has good athleticism. I do believe the injury is what hurt him this year, which is why he didn't go to the Senior Bowl. He was selected but didn't go just to try to get healthy, man. I think that's key. Derwin James, you can line him up anywhere in the secondary and he'll be fine. And we saw a game-breaking player prior to the injury. This year he played well. And I think next year, as you move forward, 2 years removed, he's going to be excellent. And also, what's the third guy you mentioned?
I was talking about Derwin James. We're going to have to leave it there. We'll get your opinion next time, Emery. I know you'll be back on the program. You're the man. Everyone, go follow him over at F-Ball Game Plan on Twitter. Emery Hunt, thank you. We'll be back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network next.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
And we are back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Kevin Walsh and George Kurtz here with you. And I want to tell you about Fantasy Factor, because Fantasy Factor is the perfect daily fantasy site for the casual recreational player. Flatter prize pools, smaller fields, and single entry contests only. Fantasy Factor always has fun contests going. Right now, free entry March Madness bracket and a Sweet 16 bracket, and Fantasy Factor is running a $100,000 home run derby this year. So simply sign up and enter, and you can do that at www.fantasyfactor.com. George.
Kevin!
My man.
Sound like Home Alone.
Here's the question, George. I know this is the George Kurtz show. I know everything is about you. But here you are.
That's right.
Being the great man that you are, communicating with the guests, letting them know that they can come on anytime. But you're using your Twitter, but you can't follow me back. Is there something that I've done? Am I not doing a good job with the George Kurtz show? I thought I was doing an okay job.
You know, how do I know who I'm following and who I'm not? You think there's a list here that says, hey, you're not following Kevin. It's not flashing on my screen here. Remember, I'm like 90 years old. I don't even know how to use social media.
I complained to Twitter.
How do I follow somebody, by the way? What do I got to hit here?
I complained to Twitter. I told them to install that button in someone's in the apps that everybody knows when they're not following me. I gotta talk to the people back.
That's
in
right. Blame the Twitter people.
let's get back to some of this NFL offseason stuff that's been moving on. There is one thing that jumped out to me, and it's probably a bunch of nothing, but I thought it was maybe worth mentioning. And there's this idea now that the Drew Brees signing was once 100% guaranteed he's back in New Orleans. And now it's like a 99.7 chance that he's back in New Orleans. There seems to be some room that maybe the talks are going to fall apart, because they haven't really started negotiating. And if that happened, boy, would that get super, super interesting. I mean, Is there any world that you think Drew Brees leaves? I mean, are you even interested in talking about the fact that Brees could go somewhere else, or is it a waste of time?
I'll talk about anything you want to talk about. It is
so
a waste of time. I'll talk about anything you like to talk about. Listen, the bottom line is this. He's already said publicly he wants to stay in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. They've said publicly they want him in New Orleans. The only way he doesn't end up in New Orleans is if New Orleans lowballs him. Mm-hmm. That's it. You know, I mean, that's really it. There's no other way. He's going somewhere. They do not have a Jimmy Garoppolo in the waiting. Well, yeah, no big deal. We don't sign him. We don't get a sweetheart deal. We'll be fine next year. We got this guy. They don't have that. You know, they pretty much have you and I behind them. You know, so it's not going to happen. He'll be there in the end. He said 99.7. I'd be 99.99999. I would be shocked, absolutely shocked, if he wasn't playing, you know, for whatever that thing is on their helmet, the floor. I can't even say it. forget it. I had it for a second, and it all went away. We're going to call it the cross or the anchor on the Saints side. He'll be there next year. That team is, let's face it, they should have been in the championship game this year, mm-hmm. if not for one of the worst plays I think I've ever seen, but specifically by a cornerback. So they'll sign him. He'll be there.
I totally agree, but let's just play this hypothetical out here. If the Vikings had the chance between the two, I think it's clear Drew Brees is the better quarterback, but because of the age, you have no idea how the contracts would work out. You can't assume they'd be the same because Brees would probably maybe only want a one-year deal, maybe 1 year and an option, and Cousins obviously wants, you know, full, long-term, all this guaranteed money. But if you're the Vikings, would you rather try to sync up Cousins and have the long-term option, or do you go with Drew Brees and go all the way in next year?
Oh, Brees. I think that's pretty easy.
Yeah.
I think, well, assuming the reports are true, remember the Vikings only offered Cousins 3 years. Now, you wouldn't offer Brees 3 years, but you'd offer him two,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that's close enough. I think the Vikings are wary of their salary cap that in a couple of years they're going to have players they got to pay. So I think that's why they offered Cousins the immediate money, not the long term money, because they realize they're going to have some cap issues here and they'll try and develop another cheaper quarterback. I think that's their options there. I think for Brees, I certainly 100%, 99.9 believe he's staying in Minnesota, mm-hmm. in New Orleans, but Minnesota would make some sense.
Yeah.
We know they're one of the contenders in the NFC, along with the Eagles and Rams right now. We look at the best teams. They play in a dome, so you don't have to worry about that. The outdoors, I like a division, right? Because, listen, Green Bay may be good, but their defense is terrible.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Bears are still a growing team in Detroit. You know, let's face it, they're never going to win anything. So, I think as far as that's concerned, Brees would love all his options there. So, yeah, but here's the problem. You know, we may not know about the Drew Brees situation until the summer if it doesn't work out. By then, all these teams will have quarterbacks. Sure. Yeah, Minnesota will have their quarterback. You know, even a team like Denver. Let's say Denver doesn't get Keenum. They don't get Cousins. They draft a quarterback at number 5. You know, they're going to go with that guy. Well, where's the salary cap coming to sign for $25 million to sign Brees?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that money goes away too by the time Brees is a free agent.
I think one of the big things that will work ultimately in New Orleans' favor is part of the reason why I think Brees wants to stay is because they were so good last year. You know, I think if I would have asked you beginning of this past season and I would have said Brees could go to Minnesota or New Orleans, I think pretty comfortably everybody would have said Minnesota is the better situation to win immediately. But now, I don't know if that's as clear. I think Minnesota still has the better defense, but I like the offense that's working over there in New Orleans. Ultimately, it's a close call, and I think because it's a close call, he'd probably rather keep things in New Orleans. And I think that works big time in their favor.
So do I. I think he's built up quite a following there, you know, with his off-the-field work. I think he wants to stay in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. We're hearing rumors. Now, these are just rumors. Who knows how true they are, but there could be he could be reunited with Jimmy Graham. Wouldn't that be something if Graham ends up back there?
Yeah.
Not that I don't think Graham will ever be the player he used to be. I think the injuries have taken that from him, which we see in football is a brutal sport, man. You know, I do baseball, I do football, I do hockey. And, you know, we all complain about the money these players make. And, you know, football, I don't think I'll ever complain about the money because it's brutal. Their quality of life is generally not the same after a couple of years of football. I mean, Jimmy Graham, you imagine, he's young by any other standards, but mm-hmm. in football, he's kind of old. He's not the same player. Dez Bryant, we're already seeing it now. He might be released by Dallas because the foot injuries have slowed him down. He's not the same player anymore. Football is a brutal sport, but Jimmy Graham to New Orleans could be interesting. The problem is, though, I think he wants to sort of break the bank here for a tight end, and New Orleans won't be able to afford that.
It'll be interesting to see where Jimmy Graham goes. The one thing that has stuck with me, I don't know. I mean, you say you can't even follow people on Twitter, although I've seen you have followed me now, so now we're best friends for life, George. But on Instagram, DeAndre Hopkins, I think it's four of his last five posts have been him recruiting players. He attempted to get Malcolm Butler, Sammy Watkins. I think it was Richard Sherman was the last one that he was interested in, and then of course it was Jimmy Graham. And he was like posting pictures of them like in Texans jerseys and stuff like that. And I mean, I don't know how the cap would work there. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins isn't the GM of the Houston Texans, but that would be pretty interesting to see if Jimmy Graham landed in Houston, I think.
That probably makes more sense because they don't really have a tight end. I mean, Fedorowicz is a nice guy. Griffin is a nice guy. But Jimmy Graham would be a step above there. Another good man. I've met them many times together. We all have barbecues together. You know, sitting around the campfire telling stories. A little fire pit action at night, which I had last night, by the way. It was chilly. But bottom line is, I mean, he would make sense there, but you're right. Hopkins is not the GM list I checked. You know, I think the GM, they have a new GM there. I can't think of his name offhand, but Bill Bryan may have won a power struggle there. Watson, it's nice when you have a quarterback, you know, rookie, second year, who's cheap, you know, because they're not making the big money yet. So generally you can afford money at other positions, but you got J.J. Watt making a ton of money. You have Winston, who's coming up for a contract, who's going to need to be paid a ton of money there. So I don't know if they're going to be making a big signing at tight end here. You know, I think that's the bottom line there. I like the idea. I think he fits there, absolutely. I think it makes sense there. But, you know, he's going to want, you know, for a tight end, $10 million a year, that's generally a lot when you think about it against the cap, especially with, like I said, they have other guys they have to pay there. Remember, J.J. Watt is paid like a quarterback.
Right.
You know, and that may be tough to get around there for Houston. Did I say Winston? I meant Jadeveon Clowney is the guy that he's also going to be up.
Oh, right. Yeah, Watt.
I think I said Winston after that. But Clowney's going to have to be paid pretty well, pretty handsomely for the player he's become. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's after next season that he comes up there. So they got to be careful there. As much as I think the fit, it makes sense football-wise, cap-wise, I think they're going to end up going with Fedorowicz and Griffin.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Let's talk about some of the other moves that we saw throughout the National Football League these past few days. We saw a couple of receivers sign some extensions, Mike Evans. We also saw Marquise Goodwin sign an extension. I kind of wanted to ask you because I don't know I think the answer actually might be clear, but probably in a way that we didn't expect it to be. Would you prefer Marquise Goodwin over Jarvis Landry now going into drafts as rosters currently stand?
Well, as they currently stand, yeah, because we don't know who the quarterback is in Cleveland, all right? So I think, yes, I would. I think Garoppolo is the real deal, you know, and this is before the five-game stint last year. I thought he was the real deal before that. So good for San Fran for getting him for not the worst price on the planet. So, yes, right now, sure, because I said the price as far as draft picks in the fantasy will land, and our draft will be cheaper as well. Mm. You know, where Landry's probably still, I think he'll get downgraded around where maybe before he's a third round pick, now he's a fourth, fifth round pick. Goodwin, you can probably get in round eight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'll take that price every time, you know, because of the situation there. Landry's price probably does come back up once we see who ends up in Cleveland. But does it change immensely? You know, it's going to be Tyrod Taylor. I think Taylor starts no matter what. They're not going to sign Kirk Cousins. That's not going to or Case Keenum or anybody. And I'm not a big Keenum believer anyway. So Tyrod Taylor, I think he's an average NFL quarterback, but I don't think he's someone who's going to complete a high percentage of passes. You know, so I have issues there. Plus, you know, if they do draft Barkley, that's a running team.
Right.
They're going to run him a lot. You know, and they'll take their deep shots with Josh Gordon. So I guess it's going to be hard for me in any way to predict more than 70, 75 receptions for Landry, just not the same type of offense.
I think that's totally fair. We had DeMarco Murray get released, so that means two things. One, DeMarco Murray needs a new home, and perhaps more importantly, Derrick Henry now is the clear lead back. I've already seen some chatter online saying that, you know, don't buy too much into it. He's a guy who just makes some pop plays. He's not overall as efficient as you need in terms of Derrick Henry. Start off there. Just thoughts on the fact now that Derrick Henry is going to have this backfield to himself.
I was killing Wizard Hunt last year for not making this move so sooner. Anybody who watched the Titans games last year, you could see It was one of two things. Either DeMarco Murray had gotten old and slow in a hurry, which once again happens to running backs. It's a brutal position. You're getting into a whole bunch of car collisions every game. Or he had an injury that we didn't know about. It was clear to see. DeMarco Murray was not the same back. They should have gone to Henry much sooner and let him be the full-time guy. Not a shock. Once again, you're saving a lot of money against the cap by releasing DeMarco Murray. You know, where he ends up is really anyone's guess. I think it'll be as a complimentary back now.
Yeah.
Certainly not as a number one anymore. He's just not that back anymore. I think 100% the right move for Tennessee. As in my mind, you know, Henry, I'm not going to put him in a running back one, but I think he's a high-end RB2 next season.
It'll be really interesting to follow where Henry is projected by a lot of these spots. I'm interested to see where DeMarco Murray lands. I think there's still talent there. But, you know, I mean, how high can you get on a guy if he's going to be clearly in a committee backfield? And that's probably what is best for him. There are some rumors swirling about Doug Martin going to the Raiders. Does that do anything for you?
Who cares?
I agree.
Who cares where Doug Martin ends up? He's done nothing. Nothing. He had one good year, pretty much. You know, one good year has propelled this guy's career where everyone's thinking, oh, he might be something. You know, no. You know, I understand the Raiders need a running back. Listen, DeMarco Murray could be in play there as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're gonna need a back here. But you look at Doug Martin.
Murray or Martin?
I mean, I'll go Murray.
I would too.
I mean, like I said, Martin's had two good seasons. He's done nothing now in 2 years. At least Murray has. It really depends on what you believe. As I mentioned before, which one of those two options do you believe? Was it the injury last year, in which case it's easily Murray, because you think he still has tread left on the tire, or did he get old and slow in a hurry? Mm-hmm. So, you know, teams got to do their research there. But Martin's done nothing since 15. He had a great year in 15. 1,400 yards, 6 touchdowns. He's never going to be a big touchdown guy because he's not a big burly guy. You know, but the last 2 years combined, he's had 827 yards. Yay! And he's been suspended a couple of times. I mean, no. I really want very little to do with Martin. I have no problem as an NFL team taking him as, once again, a complimentary back, a number two. No issue there. But as my starter, you're sort of, you know, you're going to fail here.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm out on Doug Martin. I'm not really sure why the Raiders are keen on bringing him in.
It's because John Gruden wants to go back to 1998. Yeah. Let me know how that works out for you, John.
It'll be interesting to see what Gruden is going to make these moves this offseason. We had a trade. The Eagles got Darryl Worley, corner from Carolina. Just, you know, young corner on a cheap deal that they're going to see if they can get anything out of. They sent the Panthers Torrey Smith, which is the bigger thing here in terms of fantasy for sure. I don't know if anybody's going to be, you know, dying to draft Torrey Smith or assuming that Torrey Smith is going to be what Ted Ginn Jr. was that year, but at least the threat is there. At least there's a deep field threat, I would say, for Carolina. Is this a move that can at least get you more excited about Cam Newton, or overall Torrey Smith's just doing nothing?
You know, I'm never going to get excited about Cam Newton's arm. You know, it's all about his legs. You watch him play quarterback, he has no idea where the ball's going half the time. It's all about him running around here. It's in best ball format. I like Torrey Smith because he's going to have some big games here. He catches those big passes. Week in and week out, though, he's probably going to disappoint you. So that's the issue there. I think, once again, the Eagles made a great trade here because everything I heard is they were going to release Torrey Smith. They actually got, you know, a decent quarterback. At the very least, he's a depth cornerback for him. So a really smart move by the Eagles here. And I don't mind the move for Carolina. Once again, Torrey Smith has uses. Yeah, most teams, you know, everyone thinks, you know, Sammy Watkins had a terrible year last year, which he, as far as production on the field, as far as putting up yardage and touchdowns, he did. But NFL-wise, that speed receiver forces the safety to play off the line of scrimmage because he has to respect that Watkins or Torrey Smith or you mentioned Ted Ginn, that's going to blow by everybody. It forces the defense to plan for him and make adjustments. That's where these guys have value, and that's what Torrey Smith will bring. Once again, safety has to play off the line of scrimmage, opens things up a bunch just underneath, Greg Olsen underneath, the running game with McCaffrey, the running game with Cam Newton. So the player itself does make sense.
A lot of interesting stuff. We got one segment left here on Fantasy Sports Today, and we might even be joined by Tony Cincotta in that final segment. So keep it here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone, we promise. No weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Last segment here on Fantasy Sports Today. Kevin Walsh alongside George Kurtz. We're going to have In This League coming up next. But first, let me tell you about Fantrax. Check out Fantrax.com, where you can create the ultimate Dynasty Keeper or Redraft Fantasy League using Fantrax's free commissioner product. Find out how it feels to have the deepest player pool, multi-team trades, plus player salary and contract options at your fingertips, all of which are fully customizable. And with Fantrax Treasurer, you can set league entry fees and safely distribute payouts without a third party, so you don't have to track down your owners for payment. Enter promo code AL, that's A-L, at sign up for a chance to win 10 private consultations with Fantasy Baseball Hour host Al Melchior, which is a value of $109. Find out why Fantrax is home of the fantasy sports and check out Fantrax.com today. My man, George, I want to ask you now just a little bit about a rumor that is maybe much of nothing, but it is something that's discussed. Jonathan Stewart going to Seattle. Does that matter at all? I mean, I guess in terms of the fact that Seattle at least knows they need a new running back, but I mean, if Stewart ended up being there and was actually given the lead job, could you even really get excited about that?
Well, he won't be getting the lead job. That's the problem here. I mean,
right.
Once again, a nice complimentary back, but in Seattle, he's just going to cause problems as far as, oh, who are we starting week in and week out? You know, so many cooks in the kitchen there as well, which we're seeing a lot of teams go with nowadays. It's what makes, you know, fantasy-wise, if you don't have that stud number one, which maybe only a third of the teams have, everyone else has a smorgasbord, and it's like, oh, great. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, the utility tool. One guy for this is a Chris Carson, is it Mike Davis, CJ Procise, McKissick. You know, we know it's probably not Rolls or Lacy. It's through, I mean, so many guys there, so much garbage to go through here. Like I said, no prime rib, you know, no filet mignon. Just a lot of your basic steak cuts.
I get me hungry here. Jeez, George. I asked this question to Tony a while back.
So it is lunch.
It is lunch. It's almost time. We're going to get out of here at noon. We'll pass it off to In This League, and then I got to grab myself some food. But I want to ask you this question. I asked this Tony a while back, and I think it could be something that may shape the NFL, and in turn it'll obviously have a big impact on fantasy. And it's the idea of, do you think that a team in their best-case scenario would rather have the workhorse guy like a, you know, Le'Veon Bell or a David Johnson, or would they rather have what the Saints had this year in Mark Ingram plus Alvin Kamara, where they're able to split the load but get, you know, incredible returns out of the two guys?
Well, I think in a perfect world, you want the Kamara and Ingram because they're both great. You know, but listen, that they sort of fell into that. No one really knew Kamara was going to be that good. Most teams would are going to have the one guy. Mm-hmm. You know, you draft the one guy, he's going to be your main guy. You do everything back. But, I mean, Kamara and Ingram, because once again, they get the share of a load. You get the best of both worlds, and neither one gets truly beat up.
Mm-hmm.
And teams have to prepare for both. Good luck to that. You know, so that's really what you want there. But either way can work. But for the most teams, I think, yeah, it's hard. It's hard to get one good running back, more or less, through.
Right. I think the one thing that it is I'm not sure if it's – if I don't know if anyone could really replicate it, but I am curious if teams are going to try and replicate it, right? Like, we're talking about DeMarco Murray, and he's probably headed straight for a committee. If Jonathan Stewart lands in Seattle, he would be – headed for a committee at best, if he's even able to really see any type of workload. I mean, we know that, you know, in Minnesota, they were able to use Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon so effectively. McKinnon's probably going to be out, but Dalvin Cook's coming back. So there, I mean, Dalvin Cook will be the lead guy, but you're going to still see looks for Latavius Murray. So I'm just wondering if this idea of cow running, you know, the cowbell back is going to be completely extinct in maybe 5-6 years. Maybe I'm over-exaggerating. I'm sure you'll have your exceptions, but it might be a lot harder to find, you know, that guy that's able to get near 300 carries.
Oh, I think 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we were certainly heading that way. And now we're sort of seeing a comeback, though, for the running backs. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott, now Saquon Barkley. The fact that they're going so high in drafts, too. You know, Elliott went, what, fourth overall? Barkley could go one overall. So it's sort of Leonard Fournette last year, McCaffrey last year, even though he's different kind of back there. I think we're sort of seeing a comeback. Now, once again, this could be a cyclical thing where college football is now churning out better running back ones, you know, than they were all-purpose running backs there. The thing is, the NFL, I think they, you know, we're not breaking any news here. Running back is a brutal position. The reason why teams don't like to draft a running back early in your draft is because the shelf life is so small. You know, there's very few Emmitt Smiths or A.J. Pearsons who are going to play 10, 15, 20, 12, 15 years as a running back. You just don't see that. A lot of these guys pewter out after 4 to 6 years. All the hits add up. So I think that's what we're seeing here. But, it, you know, the talent is still there. I think Emery Hunt put it perfectly. You draft any, as long as they're going to win you games, you're drafting these guys. You know, Saquon Barkley is that player who can win you games by himself. So I'm starting to wonder if we're seeing sort of a turn here. You know, sort of, like I said, it's cyclical where running back is coming more into focus here. But if I had to, you know, sort of bet which way it's going to go, I'd bet more on the fact that more teams are going to have some kind of running back by committee.
I'll tell you what, though, that is a terrific point by you, is that college is grooming more three-down backs. It's becoming more important for running backs to be able to catch the football. It's going to be more likely that you see, you know, maybe a guy like a Saquon Barkley, not just, you know, with this insane athleticism, but a guy who can help you all three downs than maybe a Leonard Fournette, although he's better at, you know, catching, you know, the pass than people say. But I just think overall, you might see more complete back. George, I want to bring in a man we're all very familiar with here on the network. That's Tony Cincotta. But I want to set the stage for everybody. What happened is a couple weeks back, Tony was listening to the program and wanted to call in because he was very upset. He was very mad because people were saying nice things about Marcus Peters. And Tony doesn't like nice things. So he had to come in and he was like, no, Marcus Peters is bad. You're all stupid. And that's what he did. And then I sent him some things that were like, no, Tony, you were wrong. Marcus Peters is good. And then he told me that he was going to come on and give a nice public apology. So I'm pretty sure I got that right. Correct, Tony?
No, that's 110% wrong. In fact, George, what about George? What about today's generation that texts you things that you didn't say and attribute to them and distort it to make their own points valid, George? Have you ever come across this?
Oh, don't we all come across this in all walks of life? Hell, isn't our president famous for doing that?
So the text I got was that Marcus Peters was number two in quarterback ratings of passes thrown his way. And what I did is I called up the day Marcus Peters was to the Rams trade was happening. It wasn't announced yet what the package was for. And I said, there's no way they're getting a first-round pick. And Mike and your guy right there disagreed with me, and I'm pretty sure I was right on that one. And then the second thing is, I never said anything about quarterback rating. I said he's 16th in the league the last two seasons in completion percentage and balls thrown against him, and which is, again, accurate. And so basically everything I said was accurate. And then there were 31 teams that were contacted because the Rams couldn't contact themselves to trade Marcus Peters, and 28 wouldn't return the message.
Well, here's the thing, though, Tony. I understand the completion percentage, but pass rating factors in the fact that he is probably has the best ball skills of any corner. And you do have to factor that in.
Why is he 16th in completion percentage if he has the best ball factor? They're throwing the ball at him.
Right.
And here's the other problem why Marcus Peters, and George can relate to this, because George is a historian of the game. When you have guys like Deion Sanders, Revis when he was Revis, you don't even notice them on the field because nobody throws the ball that way. That's the giveaway that Marcus Peters is not an elite cornerback. And secondly, is he was getting balls thrown at him when he had Darrell Revis, the washed-up Darrell Revis, on the other side. And they were still throwing at Marcus Peters.
Tony, he has the
that
most
second point is true.
Passes.
I noticed that,
yeah,
too.
He has the most passes defended since he's entered the league. He has the most interceptions since he's entered the league.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes, of course. But the thing is, the Chiefs overall have a poor secondary, so they're just calling more pass plays against the Chiefs. You can't dispute the fact that he has these incredible passer ratings against him.
No,
my point is not that Marcus Peters is the best corner we've ever seen. I've never dared to mention him in the names of prime Darrell Revis or Deion Sanders. But he's a good corner, much closer to the top 10. He's a top 10 corner.
Great.
But here's the thing. I can't really base it on whether NFL teams return calls because I know NFL teams are dumb. There are NFL teams that are asking Darrice Geis if he knew that his mother was selling herself. I don't trust those teams. I don't trust teams that think it's necessary to ask Darrice Geis if he likes men. They don't know what they're doing anyway.
Well, that's been something that's been happening for a while, right? Des Bryant had the same situation.
Des Bryant, yeah.
Yeah, when he came into the league. So I think that's the big thing is that he's a good cornerback. He's not a great
cornerback.
Is he top
10?
He's probably right around top 10, probably top. If I went back and I looked at all the statistics there, it's really, really, if you're looking at like pass catching, defending the pass, supporting the run, like how many factors do you want to bring into it? He's actually a lot better in the total equality, not just defending the pass, at defending the run, that would put him in the top 10. But his reckless style for the interception in the big play actually caused him to let up a lot of passes for an elite cornerback.
Tony,
I think he's good.
I think he's certainly within the top 10. I think that I will say I understand your point of teams didn't make phone calls, but I've seen NFL teams make a bunch of mistakes before. Tony, while you're here, let me get your take on
the biggest thing though to me is how much of a not great player he is and how much of an ass he is. His contract's only $1.7 million, and yet people didn't want to trade for him.
But I don't understand. Like, that just feels like a mistake, no, Tony? Like, doesn't that just feel like a huge whiff? Like, even if you're comfortable
saying... That sounds like
saying,
there's something that we don't know about as far as locker room problems.
Then nobody should have been able to trade for the guy. I'm looking at Marcus Peters, and I'm looking at that salary cap hit, and I'm looking at the fact that even if you're willing to say he's a top 12 corner, maybe, you know, some people have him higher, but... Like, that just feels like a gigantic mistake to me, not an indictment. Obviously, we've seen him have issues, but perhaps the Chiefs were tighter around it. I just feel like the NFL missed on the current situation with Marcus Peters.
Well, we're going to find out because they brought in two of these knuckleheads.
That's
now
what George was saying before. That's a great point.
I think Tlaib can play too, right? But we know he's going to be having some problems. And he's 32 years of age now, so they're going all in on these two guys on a team with a young head coach. Mm-hmm. This will be interesting.
I think the one
going to snatch Peter's chain.
the one luxury is something that you hate, Tony, but it's the fact that McVay's only in charge of the offense, and at least they've got Wade Phillips there, who we know Tlaib respects, and hopefully Peters, I mean, if he doesn't respect Phillips, Tlaib will probably beat it into him. So I guess that you'll have that working for him.
I don't know. Do you think Tlaib respects anyone?
Well, that was part of the reason why he thought he was going to New England, right?
Yeah, he did say he wanted to play with Phillips, so maybe. But in the end, no. I don't think so. I don't think they like, think like that. Now, especially not when they're on the field. I think that they just it gets taken over. I wouldn't be surprised if we hear about some things happening there. They're both very strong personalities in Tlaib and Peters, and that's putting it nicely, politically correct.
Now, the Rams, they have to be the favorite to win that division, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I would say so, yeah. Who's going to challenge them?
I mean, it really just comes down to what San Fran's able to do with all that cap space. I think that's one of the big questions is because they're trying to get all these guys. Like, they're calling all these teams' lines by phone. They tried to get Tlaib, and they ended up moving him to the Rams. It looks like they're going to be able to pull off Sherman, which is step one. I think there was a report that they may be interested in Jimmy Graham. Like, they've got to figure out running back if they're going to let Carlos Hyde walk. There's a lot of questions, but you can cover up a lot of holes if Garoppolo is as good as some people think, and if Shanahan is as smart as most people seem to agree.
The Jimmy Garoppolo thing is the most amazing thing in sports because we're talking about a guy, right, with a very small sample size, and we're looking at a guy. This is the honest to God truth. People don't realize this because they won some games. The end of the line is he's the highest paid quarterback, and he had 7 touchdown passes and 5 interceptions.
And those games weren't against the top, the greatest of competition either. I mean, you're probably right. We probably do need to slow the brakes on Garoppolo, but he also won 5 straight games. There's, you know, I guess renewed hope in San Fran, but I don't see them making a push for the Rams. I think they'll improve still, but maybe improve could be 8-8. The Rams look like a 11-12 win team here, and they're loaded up for bear. The Rams, in my mind, it's the Rams, Vikings, and Eagles as top three teams, maybe by far in the NFC. You want to throw the Packers in there with a healthy Aaron Rodgers, but I think even they're a step below.
I think the one thing could be, I mean, are you sure Goff is better than Garoppolo? Is that a toss up? Because I feel like most people, and Tony, I know your point with the sample size. I think most people would probably say Garoppolo is better than Goff. Are you there yet with that, or do you need more?
I need to see more. Goff played great. At the end of the year, he struggled, of course, in the playoffs. And then, like I said, Garoppolo won those games, but the numbers, he completed 67% of his passes, but I mean, five interceptions is a lot of interceptions in that small sample size. I need to see more because I think both have holes.
I'd like to see San Fran get a true number one receiver there. You know, we haven't seen Garoppolo with Pierre Garçon either, but he's not a true number one. I'd like to see them bring in somebody.
He gets paid a number one.
I was the GM. I didn't sign him, but he's a nice player. He's not a number one.
We got a little somewhat breaking news. It's not a huge stray, but Danny Shelton, the defensive tackle that the Browns picked, I think inside the top 22, 3 years ago, just got traded to the Pats for a conditional pick. So I'm assuming he will be a Pro Bowl defensive tackle in no time. And yeah, there's that.
They need some defensive help. I'll tell you what, all the drafts have them picking a linebacker or a cornerback, and they certainly need one of those this year. It'll be very interesting. But it's such a – the NFL's so crazy. Like, the New England Patriots are the only team to get a bye into the playoffs playing in that AFC East.
A bye? They get a bye in a championship game.
That'll do it for us here on Fantasy Sports Today. Thanks for stopping in, Tony. Thank you, George Kurtz, for filling in for Mike Blewett. I'm Kevin Walsh. We will see you next week.